Danny Pedrosa that will start the Italian Grand Prix from pole position.
Away they go, all freely enough.
Marquez is going to try and get through. Oh, Lorenzo has taken the lead, and he goes through on the exit of Sandinata.
Oh, Mark Marquez took the
lead. Oh, it's a big crash as well. Oh, Valentino Rossi is gone now. They are both out of the Italian Grand Prix. That's the Rossi challenge for the podium. Gone.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 366 for Wednesday, the 5th of June, 2013. My name is Jules Cisek and I'm with Martin Darlington, who's on duty.
I've just finished duty. I am on again tomorrow. Hello, everybody. Hello, Jules. And so there you go. I've got more than 10 hours. I just got me one single solo commemorative can of Guinness with me. Well, it's a particularly tall can.
So it should last the entire call?
It should last the entire call, indeed. We're actually speaking on Thursday, the 6th of June. Of course, the 69th anniversary of the D-Day landings. And on Twitter, I follow the this is going to make me sound such a spotter, the Imperial War Museum, who do these things where they sort of tweet you through what happened on that day. And it's pretty shocking, some of the stuff you read. But so hats off to those who came before us and paved the way for freedom.
And
you were waiting for me to say something more, weren't you?
Yes, sorry.
You were waiting for the punchline.
Yes.
Yabu sucks Adolf, eh? We won.
Right.
We have got – there's actually loads and loads and loads and loads and loads that we could talk about. And so we're going to talk about loads and loads and loads of stuff.
Yep.
Before we go any further, I've got to put my errata, the correction in. Last week we were talking about who was the World Superbike rider with whom Tom Sykes is now tied on 15 pole positions. That's in joint sixth place. Jim said he was convinced it was a New Zealander. I said, oh, Scott Russell, who isn't a New Zealander, so I get a and we both get a because it was actually Colin Edwards.
Who is whose dad is Australian. So
I didn't know that.
It's kind of close, yeah.
Yeah, his old man's an Aussie. So yep. Antipodean Colin Edwards. So there you go. And no one did actually write into I think they just expect so many mistakes, people don't even bother to correct us anymore. Now you've got we've had some really in-depth technical and interesting listener feedback, and
you have
one from, I'm going to let you pronounce Jonathan's surname.
Jonathan Margulies.
Yes.
Writes in, I've been reading a lot of comments in Moto Matters and elsewhere about the relative fairness of the Ducati restrictor plates. These are the plates that weigh down, add extra weight to the bike. This brings up a larger question of how performance balancing is done in World Superbikes. Are there set benchmarks or percentages that bikes or teams have to meet after which they are automatically given more air or additional weight? If so, how often does this happen? Or is it a manual process, meaning a racing committee meets and evaluates the results and decides what adjustments to make to each bike? So there is actually a set of rules, very specific, in the FIM Superbike codes and regulations. I'm not going to go through the entire thing, but the section, if you go to the FIM website, you can download this PDF. Is this a PDF? The section in that we're interested in is 2.4.4.1, and there's minimum weights for 3 and 4 cylinder bikes, and for 2 cylinder bikes, this is both 165 kilograms, but there's a handicap rule for the 1200s, and these minimum weight adjustments are based on very, very specific, they're results driven. In other words, after three events, the best manufacturers of the 1,000 4-cylinder and 1,200 2-cylinders will be selected according to the sum of the points. And then they're going to do a whole bunch of math and blah, 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 and decide whether to handicap the bike's weight or not. The handicap rule is only applicable to the 1200, but the results are compared between the best 3,000s and the best 1200s. And if the 1200s are performing better, that's when the rule is applied.
Well, yeah, and I can understand that you know, before they brought this rule in, it was known as the Ducati Cup. You know, I mean, Foggy on the Ducatis for all those years. So I can understand why the four-cylinder bikes were saying, look, we can't compete. But it does now seem to be, it's just, you know, if a Ducati starts to do well, it's going to get penalised and stop it. I mean, having said that, Troy Bayliss's last year, when he won the championship, they kept adding weight and it just didn't make any difference. But that was Troy Bayliss, you know, mm-hmm. he's a bit special. He's also from Australia, apparently.
And basically I think it could go up twice. So it could go up to 168 because it's 3 kilogram increments. And if that still doesn't prevent the performance to be significantly better in terms of results, then it will go up to 171 kilograms. And the placement of the restrictors is something that is not in here, but I know that in the past it has caused some issues for, obviously there's a balance thing, rebalancing thing. I know Checo was complaining about the fact that they were too low on the bike, you know, and
of course we've seen this in Moto2 with the rider bike combined weight.
Well, yes, exactly.
The minimum required weight where, you know, who's it that Jim was speaking to saying that, it was Pete Benson did a piece,
yes,
didn't he?
Yep.
And he was saying that, you know, Scott's still over that anyway. So he's still heavier than everyone else. But with Mika Kallio, the problem is it's non-dynamic weight. And we talked about this earlier in the season, didn't we? So I guess they have the same problem. It's where do you put it to have the minimum effect on handling?
Like can you put it on in the hump of your suit, you know? Where you can actually use the weight to turn the bike. I mean, it's kind of funky. But anyway, the weight can then be removed again if the results fall. There's no application of based. If there's a wet race, then the results from a wet race don't count towards this thing. And obviously, that makes sense. So it's fairly well defined. Sections 2, 4, 4, which are, I think there's three subsections in there, is what you want to read in the FIM Superbike Codes and Regulations document.
So which I often read just before I go to bed, if only to help me sleep.
I was just going to say, can you do the next one?
Yeah. Now, Murray Allen sent an email in, and he asked, can you clarify that swapping bikes in wet qualifying would require you to go out on dries? And We between Jim and I, we answered initially, didn't read the question properly, RTFQ, as they say in exams. So we didn't notice the qualifying bit and said, yes, you know, you must go out on different tyres. And then, of course, realised, no, that's talking about the race. And in qualifying, you don't have to, there's no restriction. But I wasn't sure if Murray actually meant to ask about qualifying. But no, during qualifying, you can change your bikes and your tires as often as you like. But
you can run in wets in the dry if you want. No one's going to stop
but
you.
But they do have to be in mind for the weekend, there is an overall tire allocation per rider. And we've seen this before. Remember in the last year of when we had Michelin and Bridgestone, and it has happened once or twice at a Bridgestone where there's only one compound that works at that track in those conditions.
Right.
So they're just like, well, there's no point going out on the other one because I won't learn anything because it doesn't work. So I'm not going to do this session. And they would sit out the session. Now, this year, I don't think we're going to see that so much because we've, you know, FP 1, 2, and 3 all count towards qualifying.
Exactly.
Unless someone goes out and does a stoner in FP 1 and it looks like the Saturday's going to be cold and on Friday they set a really, really hot, you know, hot lap rate, lap time, and they think, well, I can sit out Saturday, until we get to qualifying. So, But no, so there's no restrictions on swapping tyres and anything during qualifying.
Correct. I'm going to skip Doug. We'll do this one last because we may be able to talk. We may be talking about that for a bit. Mike Moynihan writes in and says, months prior to Marquez's practice crash in Mugello, this is where he hurt his chin, it struck me as odd how much his lower jaw protruded below his helmet's chin bar, leaving his chin exposed. Am I the only one to notice this in Parc Fermé and other instances? I thought to myself, that seems very odd, but brushed it off since his racing knowledge and equipment expertise, well, to say it dwarfs my is an understatement. Then when he heard his chin at Mugello, it sadly made sense. Yes, I realized he was going around 175. And Jim had to reply in his pithy manner and say, based on this theory, Tom Sykes should be retired.
Yeah.
Ha ha. But I've never
noticed it. So as far as I'm concerned, Mike, you are the only person who's noticed it. But since I saw that email from Mike, I've been looking for pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one of, I think it was at Cota, and it's almost in silhouette because the sun's behind Marquez. And, you know, normally you get the neck comes up, then you get the flat bottom of the helmet. Well, Mike's right. You get the neck comes into the chin, then that goes up into the flat bottom of the helmet. So his chin does come below. Now, I don't know if he wears his helmet strangely high or if he's got a shallow helmet or what. But, yeah, his chin is exposed at the bottom.
Yep.
Not massively, but, you know, to be honest,
enough to scrape it, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And Matt Oxley was reporting, I've put this in the notes later on, but so we can just repeat it, forgetting that we'd said it 15 minutes before, or by the time we get to it, probably an hour before. Matt Oxley reported that was the fastest recorded crash in GP racing ever. And it wasn't 175, it was 209.9 miles an hour.
Well, that was the speed at which he started to apply brakes because he was crashing. But
okay,
you know,
so by the time he got off, it's probably a bit below that. But well, that was reported, you can read that on MotoGP.com by the suit manufacturer, and I don't want to do them a disservice and say the wrong ones. I can't remember whether it's Dainese or one of the others. But they've got all these impact points, and the suit inflated in I think it was like 0.08 of a second before his first impact. I mean, absolutely incredible. But to have the presence of mind to say, oh, I've locked the front, I'll try and save it. No, I'm on the ground. Right, I'm heading towards what I better bail out.
Yeah.
It's like, and no hesitation. I mean, because if he'd hesitated a split second, that's it. He was into the wall on the bike.
That crash was so, I mean, have you ever seen an inside crash like that?
No.
You know, it's very, very strange. In fact, I remember Jim and I were watching it live and IMing each other, and he was immediate, like, it has to be a mechanical. But it wasn't. It wasn't mechanical. It was just a weird, strange crash.
Well, you get this kink, don't you, in the Mugello Strait, and then there is this slight hump.
Yes. And
Cal Crutchlow was saying, I need to come here on my own with my bike for a day to learn this bloody track, he said, because it does his head in. He doesn't like it. He does well there, but he doesn't like it. And he said, and it's the braking point. It seems to change every lap you do. And it's all to do whether your bike's light because you're cresting, or if you want to get, you know, you're like, right, I've really got to brake. I've got to do some late braking here. A split second later, everything's compressed because you're actually landing from, you haven't taken off, but, you know, everything's a little bit heavier. And I think that's what Marquez did. And it's just so easy to lock the front. And wow.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me when I was there last year is how narrow the straight actually is. It looks really, 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 really wide on TV, especially because of the kink. But when you're standing there on the front straight, those walls are really freaking close.
I know. I've gone into them so many times on PlayStation. how many Italians I've wiped out crashing on the PlayStation? I shudder to think. just the fans. Yeah. Now, Doug Logston wrote in, sounding concerned.
Yes.
And basically, this was Ben Spies, started the weekend. He actually qualified and then basically just felt it was not safe. He didn't have the strength in these pectoral muscle issues he's been having, which he spoke to Jim about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, whenever it was. And so he sat it out. We now hear Pirro's coming in to sub for him again at Catalunya. And Doug's just basically saying, you know, yesterday's free practice session highlighted the muscular problems still affecting Ben Spies. He won't race but continues rehab for 2 more months. And he's saying, have we seen the last of Ben Spies as a world-class motorcycle road racer? My fear is that we have. I don't think necessarily, but possibly in this series. I don't know. Certainly, we can't tell. Now, I think it's the absolutely right decision to make. If Ben's out there and he thinks, I cannot safely do, what's Mugello, 23, 24 laps? I can't safely run that distance without
with
becoming
all those
a menace.
Breaking zones.
Yeah.
You know.
Without being a menace or a potential danger to myself, but also, of course, to the other riders.
Yeah.
It's absolutely the right decision to make. And I think we're possibly seeing, you know, he needs that thick skin. Similar to when Casey Stoner just said, yeah, I don't feel right. I'm off for 3 months. And I watched Fastest last week. Mark Neal's absolutely brilliant look at 2010. But he looks a whole lot more than just 2010.
Yeah.
And it is a little bit the Valentino Rossi show. But then watching it, I realized that I was reminded why we all fell in love with him in the first place. And it's brilliant. But in there, they see Michael Scott's talking about the reaction of the – this is journalist Michael Scott, very mm-hmm. experienced and knowledgeable commentator and journalist on motorcycle racing. He said the other riders were just absolutely flabbergasted that Casey could just walk away mid-season to get better. In Ben's case, I think it's absolutely the same sort of thing. He's just saying this isn't safe, but it is worth acknowledging that some people are starting to question. You know,
well,
we've seen it before.
You know, it's two seasons in a row where this has happened.
Yeah. I mean, I can't help thinking about Norrie Hager when he got clattered by Ruben Zaus from behind, and it seemed to really, really shake him up. And yes, he was injured, but he didn't. I mean, Norrie, I don't think he'd broken a bone till he had that crash at Miller and did his collarbone his whole career. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah.
And he'd crash, get up, bounce back, and he had bruises and stuff. But and I hope that's
I don't think it's a what's in Ben's head issue. I mean, it is worrisome because the longer he's away, obviously the harder it's going to be to get back and be fast. That's, I think, very, very legitimate concern. I don't think that it's his. I don't think that he's, you know, concerned about being on the bike. I think I don't think he's scared of being on the bike at all. I don't think there's any issue there at all like that. I think he's just knows the limits of his body. And, you know, he's a young guy. He doesn't want to be Evel Knievel, who spent the last decade of his life in unbelievable pain, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a young man who's got a whole life ahead of him. So I think that he should heal up and decide, you know, when to come back. And I think it's the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, I do hope that he's back for the European, I mean, for the US rounds, of course. And I do hope that he's in Sachsenring because I'll be there too. So it'd be cool to see him back.
Yeah. I do wonder because he's been so unlucky. And, you know, and it's so much of it's down to luck. I mean, look at Marquez. He could have been killed in that crash.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when he bounced up the road on his head 2 years ago when Stefan Bradl won the championship.
That could have been career ending right there.
Yeah, he had that eyesight problem. You just think that could be, in years to come, he'll be a motorcycle racing quiz question. You know, who was the kid who everyone said, you know, birth of a legend at Estoril 2010. Had to get it in. And then we never heard of again because he had an eye problem. And then you find out, you know, he's now, you know, he's doing development riding with other young Spanish riders or something, or he's still involved in the scene, but he's, you know, and you just think there, but for the grace of God. I just wonder if Ben's thinking, should I have taken that BMW ride?
Oh, I see.
At World Superbikes.
Yeah.
I mean, he came through that World Superbike paddock like Jesus through the temple. I mean, well, no, he wasn't because he wasn't kicking people's tables over. But, you know, he just arrived and blew everybody away.
Absolutely.
And it was unbelievable. And then he came to MotoGP and started so promising. You know, he gets the satellite bike. he was on the podium at Indy in his first year, and you just think, wow. And it just, it's just
terrible. He won a race. Did he won a race the year after? You know, I mean, it's
won a race at Assen in that wonderful red and white livery. Yeah.
Yep.
But so, Doug, we share your concern, but I don't think it's a mojo thing. I think that is the inevitable perception. I think Ben Spies is probably very aware that that will be some people's interpretation, but he's hard enough and he's thick skinned enough to say, I ain't doing it until it's right, you know, and we know he won't wait till he's 100%, but he'll wait till he's 100% inside the safety margin, I think.
Right. Yes. Well said.
So, in more news,
and we wish Ben obviously the best and
absolutely
a quick recovery, and let's hope he's back on the track and kicking some ass.
Absolutely,
he's got some karma coming. He's definitely got some karma coming his way.
Yeah, but I said that year after year about John Hopkins, and I'm still waiting for John's karma to happen. Although
I think
John on Twitter, he seems happy.
Yeah, I know, but I think John also spent a lot of his karma early.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, yeah. Thinking about some of Mark Miller's stories of
exactly.
John.
Exactly.
Now, we're hoping that all your TT news will be brought to you by Jim, speaking to Mark Miller, Speak of the Devil, across on the island. We can mention that the absolutely stunning Motosys electric bike, again, won the TT0, but sadly, again, it was Michael Rutter. Well, not sadly.
Sadly.
It's great for Michael Rutter. With a blistering, was it 209 miles an hour? 109 mile an hour lap.
Yep, exactly.
Mark was doing really well, up battling with Rutter and McGuinness, who led, but I think he drained his battery too early. McPaint went a bit nuts early on, and he had to really back off towards the end. But Mark had a DNF. He had a mechanical.
He took a jump, and when he landed, something went broke.
Yeah. But so, listeners, Google the Motosys, and that's not the easiest thing to spell, but you'll get it. Just put Michael Sys or Mark Miller or Michael Rutter, TT0. That bike is just stunning.
I mean, you know what's crazy, though, is what does it look like the most?
A motorbike.
To you.
Oh, well, I was tempted.
It really looks like a 999.
I was tempted 999. To say,
the head front with the little.
You didn't give me a chance to guess.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to say the KTM. What's the KTM? The superbike, the R8 or whatever it's called.
Right. Yeah, that's R8.
Yeah, the twin KTM futuristic looks like something out of Star Wars.
Yeah, it's
sort
the
of
R8. All right. Sorry. Yep.
Yeah. Is it the R8? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's the R8.
Yeah. It reminded me of that a bit. Or the 999. So I didn't like the 999 with those.
I know. But you know what? I see 999s now and I go, huh. That diesel train look kind of grew on me after a while.
Yeah.
But once you remove the lights off the 999, it looks really sweet. I think it was just the lights that kind of screwed it.
Well, the other pilot at Welshpool, he's got a 749, and they're becoming cult classics because, yes, they're ugly compared to most Ducatis, but, well, not ugly, but they're not as gorgeous as a 748 or certainly an 848, but apparently they are absolutely wicked track tools.
Yes.
But then I've never ridden a twin.
Len Padilla races one.
He's mad, though.
Yes.
I've never ridden a twin.
Really?
Yeah, I'm too old to get together. You see, my dream track bike is a Triumph 675. I want a triple.
I can see that being a very fun bike. Mm. Very, very fun bike.
Elena Myers was taking off on one in a picture she put on Twitter the other day. She's completely airborne.
That's right.
Crazy chick. So, yeah, so TT News, Michael Rutter again won the TT Series. Was it
by 1.6 seconds over. This is the closest we've had in the electric bike race.
On a 38-mile lap.
Yeah, on a 38-mile lap.
Damn, I'm impressed.
1.6 seconds. Now, the third place was taken by a total private – well, they're all pretty much privateer teams. Well, we should say that
whatever it's called. Yeah.
It's a Honda. Yeah. Let's face it. It's a Honda. You know, we know who McGuinness rides for. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that they got a lot more money than anybody else, much more. And so it was great to see them beaten in that sense.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, given that Michael Chish is going through so much shit right now in his life, I think it was just a wonderful, wonderful little gift for him.
Yeah.
But our third finisher was a university bike, because with like an 82 mile lap or something like that, because really it was just between those three up top.
Built by students.
Yeah.
When you say university bike, because normally you'd imagine any bike built by students would only run on beer. In fact, no, it wouldn't. It wouldn't, would it? No, because they drink all of that, so it wouldn't have any fuel at all. In fact, they'd probably drink petrol. But yes, when I sent a Twitter, and I shouldn't laugh at how witty I was, but because it's not very becoming. But I was tempted to say full gas to Mark, and I thought, no, that doesn't really work on an electric bike. So full charge. But you know, he's burst through that 100 mile per hour lap by some distance. I know he wanted to get it first last year. He wanted that watch desperately. And by all accounts, Mr. Rutter doesn't like giving things away, so he's not going to get it off Michael. Right. But yeah, I mean, and the best thing about the island, having had some dodgy weather last week, it does look like it is set fair. The senior will go ahead tomorrow afternoon or this afternoon. Senior might have happened actually, but we've been really busy today. So,
well, it depends on which time zone you're in.
It does. So, but hopefully Jim's going to come across with all the teaching news. Michael Dunlop.
If we don't get it, then this week, I'm sure we'll get it by next.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think Mark's obviously been distracted because he's had some other things on his mind, like racing. And there ain't nothing shitty about Mark's world of racing. Shitty or little. So, we've mentioned Michele Pirro is back to sub for Ben Spies at Catalunya. Not sure if he's going to be on the lab bike or on Ben's bike, but on Twitter, But Dave pointed out that Pirro is the highest placed Ducati satellite rider in the series, and he didn't ride in the first two races.
Yeah.
Now, okay, Ben Spies has missed three races now, but if he'd started at Mugello, he'd have had to come fourth in the race to equal Pirro's points. And Pirro is a single point ahead of Ioni, who's raced in all five races and suffered one DNF in them. So Michele Pirro showing that lab bike, or he, Andrea Iannone, the strange decline of young Iannone. Remember last year Fausto Grassini, after the death of Marco Simoncelli, was lamenting, saying, well, that's it. Where's the next Italian talent going to come from? Because there isn't any. And I remember at the time, one of the listeners commented saying, if you're Andrea Iannone, you've got to sit there reading that thinking, thanks. But I kind of think, I mean, I've got to be honest, I rate Dovi. I think Dovi he's not a Rossi or a Lorenzo. He's probably not quite a Pedrosa, but he's right on the edge of that very, very top group. He may not be an alien, but he's like Dr. Spock. He's half human, half alien. You know, he's 50-50. Dude, he's nearly bloody there.
Dude, it's Mr. Spock.
Did I say Dr. Spock?
You did.
No, he got an honorary doctorate from the University of Hull. Seriously.
Okay.
For services to, I don't know, hair pieces. Sorry, Mr. Nimoy. Mr. Spock, yeah, indeed. Anyway, are you a Trekkie?
No, not remotely, but I do know that much.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the other thing, of course, about Ducati is Max Biaggi. Max Biaggi is now completed a full test session.
At Mugello.
At Mugello. We don't know the results yet.
No.
But it was pretty wild. He was very, very happy to be on the GP bike.
Yeah.
You know? And they stuck, you know, they put his stickers on it, and
yeah,
that special three of his.
Very stylized, you know? Three. And it was interesting because at Donington World Superbike, he was interviewed by Tony Carter of British Eurosport on you know, in the paddock. He's doing commentary work for the Italian TV.
Yeah.
And Sharon and I looked at it and she went, oh my God, is that Max Biaggi or his younger brother? I said, no, that's Max. He looked like he'd shed 5 or 10 years. He was happy. He was, I mean, we were saying, quick, text to Whittam and tell him, get an interview now. All those years where he put his hand up and said, fuck off.
<Nope.
laughs> You know, don't want to talk to you. He was animated. He was happy. I mean, like I said last week, you know, he refused to rule out. He said, never say never, but I'm really enjoying life. I'm really enjoying the commentary work. And so the MCN headliner was obviously Biaggi refuses to rule out. And now everyone's saying, oh, would he do a wild card? Do you think he'd do a wild card in MotoGP? Now, that would be awesome. Having said that, let's temper it with a little bit of realism when we think Sete Gibernau made a comeback in, was it 09? And
yes.
Really? Yeah. You know, I mean, it was like, what are you doing? I don't know. Well, it would be interesting.
It was a tough team to be a part of, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But so would Pramac Ducati, I suspect. But anyway.
Yeah, they're getting on. At least they're not, you know, being run by a dictator.
Failing to make. yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, of course. But they are struggling to make it through to Q2.
Yes. Yeah, we should definitely get to that when we get there.
So, well, one thing that did strike me was, and I know our memories as race fans are very short, which is why things like Mark Neal's series of films he's done over the last 10 years or so are so fantastic, because they remind you of the overlap between people like, you know, Alex Barros. But, you know, Barros had raced against all those people, did. Biaggi obviously was a link. And now we've got Rossi racing against people like Marc Marquez, who grew up with posters of Valentino Rossi on the wall. And that's fantastic. But our memories are generally quite short. And I thought it's a year ago that we watched in that kind of fascinated amusement as Romano Fenati did that sprint warm-up lap, whipped onto the grid, him and the flagman, who's sort of looking past him going, is there anyone else coming? Sat there with, you know, that pugilistic stance with his arms folded going, come on, let's race. And we all thought, wow, this is something fresh. What's happened to him? His same team, his same team Italia that have launched many, many great careers. They're a team that knows how to win, particularly well in the smaller classes. He qualified 20th. What the fuck's happened?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't understand it at all. You know, it's weird.
It is weird. It is very weird and a bummer. And it's not like this is a one-off. We've seen him up front, I think, once this year, and then he fell back again.
Yeah.
You know? So, but what we did have is Jonas Folger, who has been featuring, you know, I mean, figuring, in all the races, but not quite. He finally really had a good start to the weekend, a great qualifying session, ended up on pole with Maverick Vinales and Alex Rins, who are the two, you know, real fighters for the championship right now.
Yeah.
And Jack Miller again up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
There's something about crazy hair.
Yeah.
young Rossi, Simoncelli, Miller. Something about crazy hair. And Luis Salom, fifth. And surprisingly, I mean, okay, he's only, what, just over half a second off the pace, but on pole. But, yeah, Luis Salom looked a little bit subdued earlier on the weekend. But, again, that Mahindra, Miguel Oliveira, on the second row, sixth place, cracking result. And Nicolo Antonelli, who's doing very well. And Jack Miller and Antonelli were the only two Hondas in the top eight. But we had Jakob Kornfeil and Danny Webb rounding out the top three. Alex Marquez, strange, he can be right at the front or he can be fairly anonymous. Brad Binder was another Honda, or the other suitor Honda. Two places behind teammate Danny Webb in 11th and Alan Tetcher in 12th.
Yeah.
So that was the start.
But it's important to note that the... you know, Jonas Folger and Marco Vinales were pretty much, you know, it was Vinales who was setting all the fast laps. Jonas, I think, had maybe two or three that were really good, and only one where he beat Vinales, but of course that's what counts here. And then you have a big drop-off where it's almost a half a second to the rest of the group, and then another one. So there was definitely going to be this kind of staggered race, which we did get, although it wasn't quite the people we expected. And the thing is, you know, this is qualifying. Qualifying is, of course, going to be different because the setups are different. During the practices, though, it did look like Vinales, Rins, Salom, Oliveira, and Folger were all going to feature, which is exactly what happened, of course.
Yeah.
And but wow, it was a really, really fun race to watch. I have to say, it was probably the most interesting. Well, it's Moto 3 always is fun to watch, but that I went into this thinking, because we've talked about this many times about the riders who are able to lead and the riders who are only able to follow and then pounce at the end, and how I always kind of put Salom in that second category of these riders who are very comfortable sitting with a bunch of other riders, and then when need be, you know, come to the front.
He's learning though, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because he's learning to mix it up.
He had that race really well planned out, and it was him that was getting chased, because that final corner of Mugello is so far from the finish line, and on these bikes you get so much extra from a toe that normally nobody wants to lead. But the way he took that final corner, and I watched it so many times, it was so clever. It was such a clever way, and he was definitely, he had that on. That was a plan. That was a planned move. It wasn't like it was just worked out. He had been planning that for laps.
I mean, I think you could argue that, because basically, I mean, I've put the lap chart up here because it's just fascinating. We've picked these people out before, and unfortunately, Folger is doing the Folger's progression in the laps. He was first. Second, 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 third, fourth, 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 six, 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 six.
Yep.
That's, you know, that is becoming a little bit, he does seem to struggle to keep the pace for the distance, but there is a madness here. And I think Vinales sums it up where he was second, second, first, 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 first. These are successive laps. Second, fourth, first, second, fifth, third. Right. It's like, and we had the peloton. We had these six riders at the front who, you know, if people aren't into cycling, I'm not particularly into cycling, but I know that the peloton is the little group that sits at the front and breaks away from the main group, and they seem to take it in turns to lead. And it was almost like that. And the Eurosport commentators, Julian Ride and Toby Moody, were saying, do you really want to be leading? But then four laps from the end, and I mean, look at Salom, fourth, 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 fourth. This is last time I'll do this, I promise. Fifth, fifth, six, 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 fifth, six, fourth, fourth, third, first, fifth, first, 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 first. Now, he took those on that last corner, crossed the line at the end of the 17th lap, in the lead, and the others, and this is where you could argue, was it his brilliant strategy? Or did, because the others then beat each other up, and that just gave him that little gap. Having
specifically,
said that,
specifically, it was Alex Marquez that caused trouble.
Yes, yeah, and paid the price by ending up coming fifth.
Yep.
Yeah, because he made a lunge, didn't he, and balked a couple of people.
Yep. Yeah, including Oliveira, who almost crashed, and. And Vinales got stuck behind him for quite a while, which gave Salom that extra breathing room. But I still think that Salom had a plan. And
yeah, I mean, Rins,
they caught him. They caught him at the end.
Yeah, Rins was less than a tenth of a second behind him.
Yeah,
very, very close. Really, really crack. And some of the super slow mo was just
Oh, beautiful stuff. Beautiful
stuff. It's just the way they go through the, and there's something about those sweeping left rights, and then right left down the hill. Now, this was interesting as well that came out in Fastest. It spoke to Aldo Drudi, who does Rossi's helmets, does lots of the helmets, but you know, the graphic artist. And he said the face on the famous Mugello helmet with the shocked expression, I always understood that's what your face looks like when you're braking from 210 miles an hour. And it's not. The bit he said Rossi was talking about was going down the hill. You know, you come round the turn one, then you go left, right. Then you go drop down the hill to the right and the left to, and it's not Ascaria, is it?
You're talking about Casanova?
Yeah, the Cascade.
Casanova Savelli?
I think so, probably, yeah.
That's the big drop.
Drops down to the right. And
it's really crazy drop.
And it was, and the guys were saying, the commentary guys were saying, you do not understand how steep that is unless you stand there and look down the hill. I've heard this about the Corkscrew. You know, that is a real slog to walk up. So, and that's what the face was about. But to watch those little Moto 3 bikes going through, I really like this class. Yes, it's a shame we don't have the blue smoke and the smell of the two-stroke, blah, 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 blah. But, no, and I'm not dismissive because I remember stood at Silverstone 2 years ago, my life, you know, my first year there with the credentials and everything, and I was blagged my way out onto, not onto the grid, but in the sort of paddock area, and this blue smoke cloud came across, and one of the stewards just turned to me and went, I'm going to have to go somewhere else to get me fix of that after this year. And it's a great shame, but until there's a commercial imperative for them to develop two strokes, which may happen again, you know, they're not going to do it.
Doubtful.
Someone tweeted the other day, and I do apologize, I can't remember who it was. In fact, I'm not even sure I was included in the conversation, so it might not even be a listener, but they said, you know, the 500 GP two strokes were a bitch to ride, but surely so would a 1000cc MotoGP bike now be without the electronics. So what would a 500 two stroke be like with modern electronics on it? Wouldn't that be an awesome weapon? And I thought that is an interesting point, but there's no commercial imperative for the manufacturers to develop one. So until there is, I think we're going to have to do without our two strokes. But
well, not only that, but there's the actual technical rules don't allow it anymore.
No, but I'm sure they could be altered to reflect the
if it was Honda that introduced a two stroke.
Oh, yes, Jules cynical Chisek. I think you're absolutely right. But I think Moto 2 and Moto 3, that we were both so, all of us were so sniffy about when it was first mooted, I think have absolutely just picked up the torch and run with it. On the downside, the DNFs, Mattia Ferrari, Jakob Kornfeil, and Romano Fenati, who actually had been progressing reasonably well through the pack.
He got stuck. He was leading the second main group for a little bit, and then he crashed.
And three laps from the end. And Juanfran Guevara, Shay's son, that's a good rumour to start.
Nice.
And Alessandro Tannucci, who's been doing quite well as well, but he crashed very early.
Yep.
So that leaves us with Maverick Viñales leading the championship on 106 points. Luis Salom is close to 102. I mean, it's worth looking at Salom. First, third, second, third, first. Maverick Viñales, second, second, first, third. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
Those two are basically, it's, you know, who's going to be on the podium? Well, it'll be Viñales and Salom and another.
Well, hang on. If it wasn't for one round with Rins, you know, in Spain, he would be up there too.
He's on 81, so he's 25 points. He is a race win behind Maverick Viñales.
But he crashed out of the lead in Spain.
That's true. Jonas Folger is fourth with 63. Alex Marquez is fifth with 35. Brad Binder, I mean, really, really enjoyed the chats that we've been having with him when you guys have managed to track him down. Nice kid, and he's very, you know, he's that classic. It's like when I first heard Bradley Smith talking, aged 15, and it's like this squeaky, ginger-haired little schoolboy type, but the words he's using, And bless him, Peter Lenz was exactly the same. And you guys had Peter Lenz on, you know.
Yeah.
It's a child's voice, but the words he's using are those of an experienced racer who really know what they're talking about. Yeah. So Brad's on 34 points in sixth, and Miguel Oliveira in seventh place with 33, tied with Zulfami Khairuddin.
I did want to mention that Brad really had a shit weekend, and he got balked a couple of times in the group that he was racing in. And I know that he was very disappointed afterwards.
Mm.
Because he loves Mugello. He absolutely loves Mugello.
But I don't think he was as gutted as John McPhee.
No.
John McPhee's another. He's absolutely cracking lad. Very talented. Maybe not in the Maverick Vinales, Marc Marquez sort of sphere. And he missed out on a point to Jasper Iwema by 1/1000th of a second.
Oh, God.
I mean, I can't remember which one was coming past the other. I think Jasper Iwema actually made it past him. So, yeah, they were gutted. But there you go. And he'll really be happy because Mark VDS Racing's Livio Loi came home safely, 25th place. But, you know, he's a very young kid and they think there's a lot of promise in him. So Moto 3 was awesome. Moto 2, and I'm not – I really ought to – we should have chatted about this and I should have got you to do this bit. Because I don't want to sound like I'm getting all little Englander and patriotic and narrow-minded and blinkered. But What's happened to Paul Espargaro? He seems to be trying to get rid of as many admirers as he can, particularly the neutral admirers.
There is actually an excellent article that, unfortunately for you, it's written in Polish, Mick Fialkowski, who is a commentator for Polish sports.
Yeah, I know. I follow Mick on...
Great guy.
On Twitter, yeah.
Very cool guy. And he has a very interesting insights into Paul. And his theory is that Paul is unbelievably frustrated. And we're seeing this kind of...
Frustrated by his team or by the bike?
Just
or?
Everything. He's just he's putting blame everywhere except where he really should be, which is let's get my shit together first. Because did you know, I didn't know about this, but I read this in Mick's article, and he blames Rabat for that crash in Le Mans where they both didn't touch, you know?
No, where Rabat was a good 20-30 yards ahead of him.
Yeah.
He went offline, washed the front out. Paul followed him and washed the front out. Yeah, and he was saying afterwards, wasn't he, speed, you know, to be fast is good, but there has to be some skill involved or something. He's basically saying that Rabat was just a wild man.
Right.
And now he came out and he was asked after the Le Mans race, and he spoke to Spanish magazine Mundo Deportivo, and this has been extensively reported and translated. And before the race at Mugello, he said, someone said, you know, well, Scott Redding seems to be the one to chase. He went, no, Scott's very inconsistent. He suffers from greater weight, so he's slow on the straights, and he suffers with tire problems and in the higher temperatures. And he was pretty dismissive. And he said, you know, this is where we need to start pulling him back in. And the feeling I got from it was, we're going to put him back in his box and teach him a lesson. Well, that didn't really work out.
Right.
Terrible. For pole, terrible qualifying. Qualified 10th. Yeah. Scott Redding was on pole. Takaki Nakagami was second. Marcel Schrotter was third. Johann Zarco was really getting to grips with that Iota Racing suitor. Nico Tirole. And I think great hope looking at Nico Tirole for Sandro Cortese, who's also started quite steadily. Look, feeling his way. I mean, remember last year we were going, Jesus, where's the last 125 world champion gone? As Tirole had a terrible year, but then he ended it, you know, well.
He started to get there, and this year he's definitely up there.
Esteve Rabat, obviously Paul's teammate, didn't have a great time either, but he was on the second row. Xavier Simon, Alex De Angelis, Jordi Torres. Then we had Paul Espargaro, Simone Corsi, and the still recovering Tom Luthi on the fourth row with Mika Kallio, Dominic Agata, and Sandro Cortese making up the fifth. And in the race, I think we were all waiting for Paul to pull the pin and sort of come charging through, because we have seen him do that before. And I can't remember if it was Julian Ryder or Toby Moody, or it might even have been Neil Spaulding coming in. I thought, talk about damning with faint praise. He said, you know, Paul's a great rider, but he ain't no Marquez.
Ooh.
And I thought, oh, that's going to hurt him.
There's something very interesting also that I was thinking about, which was, remember when Dovi was fighting against Lorenzo in the 125, in the 250s for 2 years, and how he kind of rose to the occasion. I think maybe Paul was like that when Marquez was there, and being a runner-up, being the guy who really wasn't supposed to win the championship and somehow was doing it. There was no pressure. Really made a difference, because this year he's the guy who everybody expected. Well, you know, without Marquez, he's just a shoe-in. It's going to be the Espargaró show, and let's see who comes in second, you know?
Yeah.
Huge pressure, and maybe he's succumbing to that.
And it will be interesting. People were saying, okay, the weight thing might make a bit of a difference for Scott. Yes. But, you know, people had said, you know, Scott's got a huge amount of talent. We know that. But we just don't think he's got the consistency or the stamina or his tire management to really finish. And it'll be interesting to see, as the season progresses, the longer Scott manages to keep this consistency and keep this point scoring he's managed to get in and win races. So let's face it, that's two on the bounce now. First Brit since Ron Haslam in 1981 to win two
1800s, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanks. the longer he goes on, then the pressure on Scott will change, and then it will be the pressure of expectation. And we might see Paul freed from a bit where people go, well, actually, Mark VDS and Scott Redding package have got it right this year, and the pressure might come off Paul, and we might see a reversal. So it'd be fascinating to see how Scott deals with it. And I always have that concern. You're far better starting a season slowly and finishing it strongly, or at least by the midpoint be doing better in terms of what you get for next year than starting really well and then tailing off.
Well, you know? So I mean, without getting too deep into these guys' minds, since we don't know them that well, you have met Scott.
Yeah.
Right? We've met him many times.
He's just a laid-back teenager.
I think that kind of pressure is just, he's completely immune. I think he's immune. I think he's going to be fine as the championship contender. I think that Paul has a very, very high strung. You could see both him and Alex Espargaró are high strung in a good way. I mean, I'm not saying it's in a bad way.
Yeah.
But they are very, they're super, super, super competitive. I mean, you should have seen him last year at Indy when all the riders had to go out and play baseball.
Yeah, I remember you saying about this. Yeah.
He was the only one who was, everybody else was just goofing around, you know. He was really trying.
Mm.
I mean, he was really playing. He was hitting the ball. He learned how to hit the ball. He learned how to catch the ball. He learned how to throw the ball. He was really in, you know. It's like the guy is super competitive. I think Alex Espargaró is super competitive. I think those are the guys who do succumb to pressure sometimes if they fail, because he may be blaming people externally when he speaks, but inside I think he probably is beating himself up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to say too much about it. I mean, it's so easy to compare these guys to yourself and try to kind of like say, well, if it was me in that situation, well, fuck, I would have folded a long time ago, right? I just don't have the kind of metal to be up there mixing up with these guys. So it's not fair to say some of these things. But
no, I mean, it's all relative. And the thing is,
it is relative, exactly.
I think as well, he's suffering the adverse reaction I had to it. I sat and tried to look at it objectively, and I thought, well, part of it is because him and Alex are such good kids. They're such happy, supportive to each other. You know, they look so absolutely delighted when one's watching the other do well. And they obviously have a love for the sport. And they just, you know, there was nothing not to like about them. And so I think, in a way, my reaction, certainly, I think, was probably, if it had been Mika Kallio looking grumpy, I'd have thought, well, it's Mika Kallio. He's just doesn't really do him. Well, not looking grumpy, just doesn't really do emotion, does he?
Right.
You know, or Max.
He's
Max Biaggi,
Finland.
Perfect example. Yeah. Yeah, of course. He's the Iceman. But someone like that, you could sort of get it. I suppose it was the same as when in those 2 years with Ducati, when we'd look at the shots of Valentino, and he couldn't even raise the smile and the wave at the camera. You know, he just looked, you know, not destroyed, but so down. And I think it was so shocking because we're so used to seeing that chirpy little smile and, you know, the hey. I think Paul, if anyone's advising him, I hope that they're saying to him, just stop talking so much. Just say, we haven't started as well as we'd like, and we've got work to do. We, the collective we, just as you know, and he's always been one of those guys. He always gives credit to the team, and, you know, together we've put together this package, and it's been fantastic, and it's such a lovely blah, blah, blah. So when things are tough, you know, you take collective responsibility, say, we need to sit down and do some work, but don't start blaming other people, particularly not your teammate, for making you crash when he was 20 yards ahead of you.
That's crazy, crazy talk.
Yeah, unless he was dropping ball bearings out behind him or something. But,
Spy Hunter.
So we had Scott Redding, and he won. I mean, it was only just over 2 seconds from Nico Tirol, but
and Tirol did have the lead for, what, 3-4 laps at one point?
Yeah, between laps 12, 10 and 13.
So Scott Redding,
I did that from memory. I haven't really got the lap chart up in front of me now as I look at it. Nakagami. Again, I'm sort of like, he was leading, and then Scott got past him, and he immediately dropped to third, because Scott and Nico went past him as he ran wide in, I'm trying to think, it was a right-hand bend, so it wasn't the last turn. Oh, no, it must have been turn one. Nakagami ran wide.
Not up the hill, Poggio Seco?
Might have been.
T3,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
Then Zarco got past him. And he dropped down to fourth, and then he crashed.
Yep.
During lap 9. So that little thing we heard from this Japanese journalist via the Eurosport guys was sort of, I've started looking at him since then, and he possibly
5 races, you know, 3 non-finishes.
Yeah, and Axel Pons, please, Sito, will you have a word with the boy and just say to him,
right,
hang up your gloves. He's crashed again. Yeah. I think it was a crash. I didn't see it. It wasn't shown or anything. And Stephen Odendahl, Donny Tata Pradita, and Rafitaban Susipto were the other crashes. Oh, and Xavier Simon. But we had Redding, Tirol, and Zarco were on the podium. And that was Zarco's first, which I found a surprise. But apparently it's true. Paul Espargaró did make it up to fourth. Mm-hmm. Mika Kallio, fifth, and Jordi Torres, sixth. Simone Corsi, Alex De Angelis, Tom Luthi, seventh, eighth, and ninth. Dominic Agata, MotoGP race winner Tony Elias in 11th. Marcel, you have to pinch yourself and remind yourself to about 2006, don't you? Marcel Schrotter was 12th. Esteve Rabat was 13th. Sandro Cortese picked up 2 points in 14th. And Randy Krumenacker was 15th. Good for you, son. And I like
we could, we could also stick the other kind of label on Tony Elias, the rider who cost Rossi the 2006 championship twice.
Yeah. Knocked him off in one race and beat him in another. By, what was that, 9,000ths of a second or 2,000ths of a second or something? Yeah. And just to repeat our plea to Hervé Poncharal, Guy Coulon, and the rest of Tech to our team, we had Danny Kent in 22nd. We had Louis Rossi in 26th. Seriously,
go
guys, start the Kickstarter campaign. We, the fans, because we love Tech to Art, we're a fantastic team. You've been great to us. I hope to speak to you this year. If you're listening to this, that's probably my chance is gone. do a Kickstarter campaign, and we will chip in, and we will buy you a Kalex chassis or a Suter. But I'm sorry, that. The Mistral, it ain't working. So, in the moving swiftly on, listening for the sound effect of tumbleweed there, being stood all my own.
Look at the standings.
Yeah. Scott Redding on 101 points. And Nico Tirole and Mika Kallio are tied in second place on 58. He's 43 points in the lead.
Five rounds in.
A second, a fifth, a second, a first. It's only five rounds in.
Yep.
They've got 17, of course, because they don't race at Laguna Seca. So 17 rounds. So we, after the next round, we're a third through after Catalonia. Mm-hmm. Estevez Rabat's on 55 points. Paul Espargaró's on 54. Dominic Agut's on 53. So we got one, two, three, four, five riders within 5 points of each other. That it could be really quite interesting. And then Johann Zarco, who really is getting to grips with this, and he's just so entertaining.
That's awesome. That's awesome because, yeah, exactly. I hope to see him up front more. Definitely.
Nick Gatterall's thinking, oh shit, not him again. After that last year in 125.
Oh, my God.
I might try and see if I can track him down at Silverstone this year and speak to Zarco. I want to know, why did you sit up and look behind you? Where was that?
It was,
Was it Sepang?
No.
I think it might have been Sepang. They came around the left-hand corner and then went to a...
No, it couldn't have been Sepang. It was much earlier in the season.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's they're coming out of the left, a sharp left, fairly sharp left. I thought maybe it was Misano.
I was about to say, was it Donington? But because they don't race there, so... Misano. Yes, it could have been. Yes. No, I think you're right. I think it was. Yeah, it feels nice, wide and open. Yeah. And he sort of sat up and looked behind him and gave Tirole the chance to beat him. But
yeah,
there you go. So moving on to MotoGP. Wow. Friday, Marc Marquez gets off the bike at 209.9 miles an hour. And okay, by the time he hit the ground, he's probably only doing 206. So fastest ever recorded in GP racing. Ouch. Bradley Smith just crashed himself all over the place. He had to have he lost bits of a finger and had to have a skin graft on Monday after the race.
Did you see the photo that Wiggy-san posted?
Was this of his finger?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's basically
nasty.
Skin.
Yeah. Nasty. Well, it's, worse than that.
But also, did you see the photo of him on the grid on the race having been beaten up, and he'd got taken some gravel up inside his helmet, they think, on the crash on Saturday.
Right.
Was that in FP4 or QP? I can't remember. And he had bruised face, and he was trying to put his helmet on, and the grid girl, you could see her wincing. She wanted to mother him, basically. I think I want to mother Bradley. He's just such a cute kid, you know. but he's trying to put his helmet on, and you're just thinking, oh, my God. And seriously, for some reason, the Rebrits going, I think because of this thing that Yamaha wants to sign Paul Espargaró, well, the way he's going, they may not want to if it carries on, but Yamaha wants to sign Paul, Bradley's on a two-year deal, therefore Cal might lose his ride, and some Brits seem to have it in for Bradley Smith. I'm thinking, hang on a sec. I remember this kid breaking his foot age 15 and racing the next day and doing really well in his first year in 125s. That was ridiculous. The fact that he was even on the grid was crazy ridiculous. Marquez, I mean, he had this what looked like a chin strap welded onto his chin where he'd injured himself in this incredibly fast crash. He crashed again on the Saturday but didn't hurt himself.
He crashed in every single session.
Yeah, yeah, it was a crash.
Every single session.
But
except warm-up.
Yeah, but they said that, who was it who was talking? I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been Nick Harris and Gavin Emmett on the MotoGP.com feed, saying he's possibly doing the Lorenzo 2008 thing, but he's not hurting himself anywhere near as badly. Now, fingers crossed. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. But I don't know. I think this kid is razor sharp, and I'm just hoping that this is enough. Because, again, watching fastest, Jorge turns around and says, well, it was just too easy. I was like, hey. And then I got bitten. And then he went and tried too hard and got bitten again, and then backed off and got bitten again. And it was, you know, he was knocked out of Catalonia. He'd obviously, he'd done his legs at China, and it just crashed and crashed and crashed. I think Marquez might have learned from that experience that Lorenzo had and what's happening to him now. And I think we might see him coming fourth or fifth. I don't know, and being happy with it. I don't know, actually, probably not. But anyway, because of their trials and tribulations...
At Catalonia, dude? No, I don't think so.
No, you're right. I don't know why I said that. Stupid, really.
but, he's going to be on the podium or he's going to crash.
Yeah, you're probably right. But Marquez and Bradley Smith didn't make it through to Q2. So they
now, the reason for that was because Mark crashed his bike and he had to go out on the second.
Yeah, on the second bike, and he just couldn't
and it was
get
not
the
set.
Time done.
Yeah. And I believe that he was still on his second bike for QP2 because there's only a few minutes between the two sessions, and that's also cost him positions. But they did fix it.
So you got a banged up Marc Marquez and a seriously banged up Bradley Smith finished first and second ahead of, and this is in Q1. Ahead of Andrea Iannone, which brings me back to our earlier point of the strange decline. I mean, he was 0.4 off Bradley, 0.7 off Marquez. Randy Depino.
And this is Mugello, which he knows really well. He won the race here at Moto2 last year.
Yeah.
You know, clearly it's not track knowledge or anything like that. It's and the thing is, the Ducatis were not bad at all.
No.
You know?
No, they were doing pretty well. And I've got to give a word out. Michael Laverty was ninth in Q1, ahead of teammate Yoni Hernandez on the art Paul Bird Motorsport, whereas Michael Laverty's on this thing they've built themselves, ahead of Carol Abraham, ahead of Brian Staring, Hiroshi Ayama, Lucas Peszek, and of course Ben Spies didn't, he ran, but he didn't actually get a qualifying space. Sorry, in fact, no, that's right, of course, he didn't do qualifying.
No, he did practice, yeah.
Now, already through to Q1 was Michele Pirro and Aleth Espargaró on the lab bike and CRT, respectively. Mm-hmm. And we had one of those strange QPs. I do like this new format. It is very
exciting. I love it. It's so fun, man. Well, it is really fun.
Jorge Lorenzo was hitting 147 after 147 after 147 after 147.
Right from his second lap, right? His second lap, he was already in low 148s, and then he just started rolling off to 147s.
There was one session, I think it might have been FP3, and Julian Riley made the point. He said every single lap has been quicker than the preceding one throughout the, I think it was the third run he did. Incredible. Yeah. But his fastest was 147.226. Danny Pedrosa had been struggling. He wasn't getting it.
All weekend.
And he was doing 148s, and he was second or third, but he was three quarters of a second off Lorenzo or something. Then he did a Danny. He did a Casey, except it didn't happen in the first 10 minutes, and then just went back and sat in the pits and watched everyone else struggle for an hour. But he did a 147.157. So he nicked, and it was really at the end of the session. Meanwhile, Andrea Dovizioso has latched onto Danny and got a toe and gets himself on the front row. And there was a bit of a spat between the two in part Fermi, but I was really impressed with both of them here because Dovi, very calmly, you could see him talking quite animatedly to Danny, but not in an aggressive way, just in a, no. Look, da, 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 da. And whatever he said, Danny, you could see Danny going, oh, okay, yeah, no, that's a fair point. In that kind of body language. I don't know what was being said because I don't know if they were speaking Spanish or Italian or a mixture of both or whatever. And I couldn't hear what they were saying, even if I spoke either of those languages fluently, which I don't.
Well, they both speak English quite well, so I'm guessing English.
Well, I just remember what Len said, that a Spaniard and an Italian can understand each other if they want to.
That's true. That is true.
So
anybody can understand an Italian if they really want to.
Generally, you don't even have to hear them speak. It's just body language.
Exactly.
But Dovi made the point afterwards. He said, I've always spoken out in the riders' meetings against the people who loiter and dawdle on the racing line waiting for a tow. He said, that's not what I did. He said, I was almost at race pace. Danny came past me and I just wanted to see how long I could stay with him. He said, and I see that as a different thing. And I've got to admit, I agree with him. And
yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to roll off? I mean, there's so little time, especially in this new format, there's so little time. And the guy comes past you.
You can't waste
he's fast.
Because you might upset him because you tell him. And this is what used to get me about Casey whinging about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's people on the same track as me going the same way, and they sometimes follow me. Really? Fucking hell. What do you want us to do about that then? I'll tell you what, Casey. Well, you ride the other way around the circuit. You know, I mean, it's a stupid thing to say. By me, I mean, sorry to hit him for that. Bless him, he's gone. But it was kind of. What do you expect? At the same time, you could understand the concerns when we had the serial towers, Hector Barbera. Yes, you may well hang your head in shame. Who would sit on the racing line waiting for someone to come by? Well, hopefully not on the racing line, but close to it. So
well, I mean, you know, there's rules against this now. I mean, you can't do that. You know,
no.
So if the marshals see it, they will penalize you.
But Dovi got himself on the front row, thousandths of a second ahead of last year's teammate Cal Crutcher, who must have been spitting feathers because he looked nailed on for front row.
And by the way, did you know? I was watching the qualifying with my wife B, and remember when Cal crashed? And I said, watch, he's going to run back and he's going to just light it up. And once again, it's like. Just crash right away. Just go out.
It's a ritual.
Crash,
go out. Throw
go
it.
Crash.
In fact, they want to get one of those Mistral chassis. Chuck a MotoGP engine in it.
Oh man!
But it don't have any brakes. It get. Let just say that's your crash bike. All right, brilliant. And go out. And I also point out to people, Jules isn't a Mormon. His wife B. His wife's name is B. It's not wife B. He hasn't got wife B, a wife A, and a wife C. I just thought that might be confusing for listeners because wife B, when you say my wife B, it sounds like that's your second wife. Wife A was, you know.
I watched motorcycle racing with wife B. Yeah.
Yeah. Wife A's for weddings, weddings, funerals and bar mitzvahs and wife C's for holidays. Anyway, moving swiftly. God, I hope B doesn't listen to this.
Well, she does. Anyway, so.
Nice. So, yeah, so we had, but then we had Crutchlow, Bradl and Marquez on row two.
And Rossi, we're still missing Rossi, yeah.
And Rossi, just, because on Friday, he looked really, really good.
Really good.
He looked really, him and Lorenzo Saturday. Were like swapping the top spot all the way through. And 0.1 of a second behind him was Nicky Hayden, Alvaro Bautista, more of whom later, Michele Pirro, Bradley Smith and Alex Espargaro. So, you know, I mean, we had the MCM Fantasy League transfer window last week. And
don't remind me, I picked Marquez.
Yeah, well, I picked Rossi. Because I thought Mugello, Catalunya, Assen.
Right.
If he's ever, you know, he ruled Mugello till 2008. I was at Assen when he won his 100th title and unraveled that massive, ridiculously wonderful banner. And, of course, Catalunya, Sharon and I were there in 09, and Tenney wasn't there, but 09, that amazing race. I thought, these are the three races. This is the time to stick Rossi in. And something happened. I'm sure everyone knows. I mean, the race started, and this was an absolutely nailed on, no doubt about it, Commonwealth Garden racing incident. Rossi had gone around the outside of Alvaro Bautista in turn. Hang on, we've got one. In turn two.
It's Materazzi.
Is it the first left? Is that turn two or turn four?
No, it's four and five.
So Bautista's on the inside line, going around the left. Rossi comes around the outside ahead of him because Bautista had been balked by somebody in front of him. I can't think who it was. I did read it earlier today when I was researching this shit. Bautista comes swinging across the right to hit the apex for turn five. But Rossi's in his way. But Rossi does move slightly left to set himself up for the apex. So, yes, there was more movement about it. Basically, they just hit each other, ran off. The worrying thing was the speed that Rossi... Bautista went down. Rossi rode on his bike through a fairly narrow gravel trap and hit that fencing so hard.
Yeah.
And I think he was just winded because... I mean, Sharon and I, she said, that's it, I'm not going to Barcelona. If he's not there, I am not going to Barcelona. I'm not interested if he's not there. because he looked really hurt. And I think he wasn't. I think he was just stunned. Because then 10 minutes later, he was back sat in the pit. Now, he was smiling and waving at the camera.
Bautista was doing that, you know.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
And Bautista was doing hand signals to the camera going, he ran into me. And at the same time going, dig faster, lads. We need a tunnel out of here because I've got to get out of Italy alive. You know, it was no one's fault.
It was absolutely a racing incident. And the first time I saw it, I was like, ooh, that could be... Bautista could be penalized for that. And then I watched it again. I was like, nah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, it was in a very, very tricky traffic.
I mean, reading
start of the race, this happens.
Yeah. Reading some of the reactions on Twitter and the like.
It's happened so many times.
Yeah.
With Alvaro. So he's got a history on his shoulders about this kind of incident.
It wasn't like last year when he wiped out Lorenzo coming from miles back. I think that was Aston, wasn't it? And saying, well, I missed my marker. Well, you might miss your marker, but you don't lock your brakes up and wipe out the race leader. You just don't do that. That was reckless, and obviously he got penalised for it, but this wasn't. This was just a racing incident. I take partial blame having put Rossi in my fantasy road team. But then the race developed, and it was interesting. Lorenzo got himself – well, he led the first lap. In fact, he led every lap. That was it. In fact, the first three remained the same until lap 20, other than on lap – where did he go past? Yes, on lap 19 – Marquez having so patiently, remember at Jerez where he was chasing Lorenzo and he kept getting so close. He was outbreaking himself. He was running wide. Then he was catching up to him again. And obviously we had that last corner pass and he did get ahead. Much more mature. Now, maybe it's because it's his teammate. And apparently they're not, Danny's not been very nice to him.
Apparently.
I hadn't, apparently. Well, yeah, exactly. I hadn't noticed this until someone pointed out after the last race that he'll chink bottles of champagne with Lorenzo, and those two used to absolutely hate each other's guts. Well, the King of Spain had to force him to shake hands, didn't he, on one race? He doesn't acknowledge Mark,
and Mark really tries.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, we're back to the Polish Pogo thing. It's like, Danny, I'm not being funny, mate. You haven't exactly got an army of fans as it is. This kid is Spanish and he's Catalan, just like you. And he's much younger and he's a bit more affable. I like Danny. I think inside there is a shy kid who's got a lot of good stuff to say and he's a great racer, but he's not making any friends.
put yourself in his. Sorry, but I wasn't clearing to stop you from talking.
No, that's fine.
I had a long conversation about this with a good buddy of mine who's really into racing, and we both realized suddenly that, you know, this is really the first time where the competition that Danny faces on his own team is the competition that could actually replace him. Because even when Stoner was there and we were saying, well, you know, if Pedrosa doesn't do, you know, as long as it was a non-Spaniard, without Repsol backing,
yeah,
I think Danny could have kept that seat for a while longer without winning a championship. But this guy is really, I think it's the best thing that happened to Pedrosa since last season when he had his first non-injury year. I think Marquez is the best thing that could have possibly happened to him. I mean, he may not think so right now, but I think he is pushing Pedrosa into a completely new level of racing. Now, you know, when I say completely new level, we're talking about, you know, that last little bit that like Colin Edwards always talks about. You know, it's like, you can get the first, you know, between a club racer and a MotoGP racer, there may be like a 5 second difference per lap between the best guy, best kind of club racer, but try to get that last half a second or quarter second, you know, good luck. And I think that this is the kind of thing that I actually think Marquez is going to be doing wonders for Pedrosa.
Well, it's been said that 2006, 2007 Rossi doesn't win. Then he suddenly has this upstart little teammate who turns up in 2008 and he wins in 2008, 2009. Maybe there's a comparison there that, you know.
Well,
yeah,
I think the 2008, it was really, Rossi was determined to beat Stoner. You know? It was Stoner that was driving Rossi. I don't think he considered Lorenzo a threat yet until 2009.
I don't know. He didn't want him as a teammate. He tried using Zimmerman to block him, didn't
he? That's true.
And don't
true.
Forget, he got pole position his first two races and he won his third with a really unconventional pass at, not Portimao, Estoril.
No, in Estoril. Yep,
God, I missed that track already.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and that was a track that Rossi really, really liked to win at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I did like about this race was Marquez was really patient, really smooth, didn't get in Danny's way, didn't trip himself up, and then he'd been setting it up. And you didn't know it was coming, I certainly didn't, but when he went past in a quite an unconventional place, it was brutal, but it was smooth, and it didn't in any way impinge on Danny's racing line or anything like that. And he gets in front, starts to pull away, two laps later he crashes. So that was really both sides of him. But what I found fascinating was I think this kid learns so quickly, which is why I don't think, goodness me, fingers crossed, touch wood, I don't think he's going to go through a massive crash.
A crash fest.
Because I think he's had it. Yeah. I think he's that's it, I hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just before we go on to the standings, just interesting looking at the speed trap. Now, this is, we all know, this is a snapshot. And the people who know that Mugello is a Yamaha track, or it favours the Yamaha more than the Honda. Julian might have said,
Honda. Well, it's not that it favours the Yamaha more than the Honda. It's just that the Honda, the strengths of the Honda are neutralised at this track because they don't have this need to stop and then be able to get on the gas early. It's every corner. There's no hairpins.
No.
You know?
Well, they sort of are, but they're massive wide radius ones you can go around at speed.
Yeah,
And people say, well, you'd think it would favour the Honda because of the long straight, but it's the same as Qatar. Yes, there is one long straight, but there's 15 corners, and they're pretty much all fast sweepers. So it really suits them. But it is quite interesting to look. Andrea Iannone, 214 mile per hour in warm-up, was the fastest, the slowest, and the only person below 200 miles an hour was Luca Pešić, who in the race hit 197. That was his fastest on the Kame Iota Racing Project Suter CRT bike. Colin Edwards was the second slowest, but he was at 201 miles an hour. So they're all doing over 200 miles an hour down there. Just absolutely crazy.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And it was Iannone, Pirro, so there ain't nothing wrong with the Ducati speed. Bautista, Pedrosa, Marquez, Dovizioso, Hayden, Lorenzo, Bradle, Spies, Rossi, Crutchlow, Smith, Courtier, so on and so forth down. All, in small increments down. And a lot of them not during the race or even during qualifying. Free practice.
Yep.
Quite interesting mix. So the standings, Danny Pedrosa on 103 points, and Lorenzo could have
we didn't go through the finishing order.
Didn't we? Good Lord, no. We didn't.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, Lorenzo stayed up front. Yeah. Danny inherited second, having been passed by Marquez when he crashed. And, of course, Cal went up to his second podium on the bounce.
This year, yeah.
Yeah. Bradle came in at fourth, equaled his best ever result. And I'm really hoping that Stefan's starting to move into a bit of a rosy patch, although he was 13 seconds behind. Just ahead of Andrea Dovizioso. Nicky Hayden not that far behind there. Michele Pirro in seventh. Nicky has some really lonely races, doesn't he?
Yeah.
No one catches him, but he can't quite catch the people in front. And he must go around thinking, I'm sure there's some other blokes here earlier. Michele Pirro was seventh. Alex Espargaró, eighth place. I mean, Jesus. Cracking effort. Bradley Smith was ninth. Hector Barbera was 10th. Randy Pugnay, 11th. Danilo Petrucci, 12th. Andrea Iannone, 13th. Colin Edwards, 14th.
Nice finish.
Carol Abraham's got the last point in 15th. Hernandez, Laverty, Staring, and Pešić We lost Marquez, Corti, Ayama, Rossi and Bautista, obviously, on the first lap. Hiroshi Ayama crashed quite heavily, actually, didn't he? But he expects to be back for Catalunya, although he did hurt himself, apparently, on the Avinci Blusens FTR.
You know, I do want to go back to that crash that Marquez had was another really strange crash.
Yeah.
In the race. It's not a place where you would really expect him to go off, because it's a shallow corner.
Mm. But it reminded me of the Takasi front wheel washouts that Stoner and Nicky were having. Yeah. Do you remember those?
Of course, really, exactly.
Almost like slow motion. Really gentle, just sort of, oh, what happened there?
Yeah.
I remember Stoner saying, you know, I can push the front, I'll save it on my knee 6-7 times a race normally. He said, and that some corners with that Ducati, there was no warning. It just went, and it was like too fast. Or, Ashton 2009, watching Pedrosa and Dovizioso both crash on, it was either successive or maybe 2-3 laps apart, turn one, exactly the same place. And it was just like this really graceful kind of, hey, I'm just going to lie down.
Yeah.
and the scratch mark, we were sat just above turn one.
Boy, but did you see his reaction, though?
Marquez?
Yeah.
It wasn't quite Aragon. Do you remember when he did the dying swan at Aragon, punching the ground and absolutely destroyed? It wasn't quite that, but he was.
Right.
He was very pissed upset. Off, wasn't he? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, again, I'm just thinking, just watch the kid learn. I'm convinced that he's going to. Lorenzo could have really done with him staying in second place, because he would have only been 8 points behind Danny, not 12.
Yeah.
Danny would have lost those extra points for coming second. So Danny's on 103 points. Lorenzo is on 91. Marquez is on 77. Cal Crutcher on 71. Andrea Dovizioso, you know, cracking so far, on 50 points on the Ducati. Valentino Rossi's on 47. Nicky Hayden's on 45. Alvaro Bautista 8th, Stefan Bradl 9th, Alethis Barcro 10th. Fantastic.
Incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
Really, really, really good. Okay, some people behind have had some bad luck. Well, hey, you know, he's 11th, 11th, 9th, 13th, and 8th. That's pretty damn good when people were saying, oh, they'll all be getting lapped. And very, very few of them are being. And I'm trying to think, have we had them lapped?
No, I don't think so.
I can't remember, certainly. So looking forward to Catalunya next weekend. I'll be there, but not in my capacity as a MotoPod correspondent. I'm going as a fan, and we are sat in the Rossi stand. So when Lorenzo beats him again and you see what looks like a commotion in the crowd, it will be the chubby little middle-aged bloke in the Lorenzo hat and T-shirt getting shit kicked out of him by all the irate Rossi fans as I'm stood.
You're actually going to go there wearing... actually, Catalunya, it's safe. Yeah, it's safe in Catalunya.
Well, they're Spaniards, aren't they? No, I mean, it's not football, soccer.
No, as you guys I know.
You know, where you do not wear a blue shirt in the red end or the red shirt in the blue end or anything, but I'm sure it'll be fine. I will engage in some good-natured banter. Hope they're not too angry. but this has got the makings of a really interesting season. I mean, we look at Pedrosa, fourth, second, first, second. Lorenzo, first, third, seventh, with that weird Le Mans race, first.
Was that the first time, that France finish, other than the crashes last year,
it's the worst since 2008.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
He had a seventh and a tenth, I think, in 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one weird. I think the tenth might have been one of those flag-to-flag, come in, chop and change your bike. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But yeah, of the ones he's finished, that's his, worst result. No, in fact, I think that is his joint worst result since 2008. Yeah,
unbelievable.
And
it wasn't, and it was something that we still don't really know what really went wrong. You know,
No, he said, look, I'm not saying, because Bridgestone, he said it was the tyre. Bridgestone came out and said, there's nothing wrong with the tyre. It's exactly the same as all the others. We've tested it, we've examined it, we've, you know, x-rayed it and microscoped it, and it's fine. It must have been set up. And Hoy's come back since and said, I'm not saying the tyre was defective. I'm saying it didn't feel the same as the others. And Rossi's mentioned this before. Your Saturday tyre, you put the same one on the Sunday, or, you know, the same, not the same tyre, but the same, you know, compound, and it's different.
Yeah.
Which is strange. So, oh, goodness me, it's 10 past 11.
Let's wrap it up then.
Start thinking about wrapping up. World Superbike this weekend at Portimao. Fantastic circuit. Should be fantastic fun to watch. Tom Sykes, you know, is absolutely on it, wants to continue. I'm hoping that Sylvain Guintoli and Eugene Laverty can do something about that, because they're both in my fantasy road race team and Jim's. And in World Supersport, David Salom returns to the Kawasaki, it's Kawasaki's riding, anyway, I can't remember the exact team. But that does mean that Florian Marino, who's been standing in for him for the last few races and done so well, there's no news on whether he's going to be retained, because they were hoping to put an extra bike on, which would be good to see if they did. Keenan likes Portimao, so he might be looking to close some of that 30-point gap. He's behind Sam Lowe's. But yeah, really looking forward to this weekend. Did you see the AMA Pro National at Road America?
I watched it, yeah.
Was it good?
It was a good race.
I presume Josh Hayes won. Did he?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, okay. Oh, Matt Maladin is dead, long live Josh Hayes. It's sort of, you know, the king is dead, long live the king. Yep. Yeah, he wants to watch out because Ben might end up back there, just to remind everybody. But we did mention the Motorpod Fantasy League.
Oh, you must mention it, of course.
I'm in 8th place. Jim's dropped a bit in 18th, and Jules is in 27th.
Thank you.
You're welcome. 7247 is the pin. If anybody has got a team in the MCN League and wants to join our mini league, we've got over 300 of us in there. So, I mean, you're still nearly top. Well, you're top half anyway, Jules. That's not bad.
Thanks.
I'm trying to think. There must be some people right at the bottom who've got a massive amount of money left in the bank. And maybe someone should email them and say, it's not real money. You can't actually have the balance of the 10 million you haven't spent on good riders. But that's just me being cocky. Yeah, you watch me crash and burn at the next round. And yet Catalunya in 10 days' time now. So hopefully there will be some of Jim.
Jim Race here for Motopod with Mark Woodage of the Wilson Craig Racing Team, kind of lording over Cameron Donald and the rest of that crew. You've had, for the most part, a really damn good week, a couple of disappointments, but good to have you back on board. It's been a long time.
Yeah, mate, it has been a long time. And it's been an interesting couple of weeks over on the Isle of Man. We've had some, you know, mixed results, good results, average results, and obviously a DNF. But all in all, everybody's safe, and we learn a lot from it and see what happens next year.
Okay, so I would be remiss if I didn't ask what the hell you did to yourself on Monday night.
Yeah, well, obviously Monday night, it was the first evening of the presentation from the Superbike and the sidecar, and obviously working with Tim Reeves this year and doing his motors at gone and had a few drinks with Tim, and you know, it weren't really a big night out, but when we'd got to the casino, I'd met up with Graham Gowland and Glenn Richards, good both, super both, sport friends,
both bad ideas.
Yeah, and we ended up drinking Sambuca, and cut a long story short, we were toasting the late Craig Jones, to be fair, and telling stories from the past. And before you know it, I think between the three of us, we'd consume two bottles, and that weren't a good idea. And I was very ill. Very ill. But yeah.
The photo that Graham posted was probably one that you will eventually pay him back for.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, he had a laugh. I mean, unfortunately, no taxi would take us home because I was very poorly. And luckily, the Manx police happened to give us a lift home in the back of a police vehicle, and Graham sat in the back taking photos while I was just curled up in a ball, obviously being sick. But yeah, that's that, and that's
gone. All right, all right. So yeah, sorry, but I couldn't let that go.
That's
so
all right. It's no problem.
Let's talk about racing, because you guys put together some amazing, very consistent engines this year. Well done.
Yeah, I mean, we were looking obviously over the TT, and Cameron's Superbike and 600 pretty much topped the speeds all week. The crew topped the pit stops all week. The bikes have been good. You know, we built on them from last year, changed some small things, and you know, we knew we were going to be strong this year. There was just a few things, you know, that, you know, we needed to address, and that, you know, we had a good race on Sunday in the first Superbike race. The 600 racing were just good. I mean, Cameron did 127.3 mile an hour, was the second fastest lap in one of the races, and only managed fifth place. I mean, Michael Dunlop was doing 128 mile an hour laps, which was unbelievably fast for a 600. So the racing were just fast, you know, and it was close and tight, and that were the results we got. So, you know, all in all, it weren't too bad.
Michael was on fire. I mean, it's been a great week for him, and it was for the senior today, which just got done a few hours ago. It was a great battle between him and McPint. But, I have to ask, are the rules close enough in Supersport on the aisle that you can pull the same 140-plus horsepower that you could back when you were working with PTR and building World Supersport engines?
Yeah, pretty much. Rules are identical. Our engines are obviously a step forward from back then, and the electronics are, so the bikes are as good. And obviously, Michael was riding a PTR spec bike anyway. So the bikes are world championship spec, to be fair. And the Honda's a good package to have around the Isle of Man.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are all packed up now, which means that you can kind of relax and enjoy the rest of the weekend. When does the truck head on to the ferry?
I think the truck leaves, it's either Saturday night or Sunday. I'm heading back tomorrow afternoon because I've got a motocross team I've got to take care of on Sunday. And then I've literally got 3 days in the shop, and it's off to Knockhill for the British Superbike, where I crew chief Keith Farmer in the Paul Bird Motorsport team. So, yeah, I've got a busy week still.
you're spreading yourself a bit thin, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, the Wilson Craig thing was obviously contracted, was the Northwest and the TT. That's all Cameron intended to do. So basically, the bikes were a small prep in the winter, small upgrade, and it hasn't zapped a lot of time. I knew the month of May we're going to be busy with that. Obviously, the Paul Bird thing, it's just a weekend thing, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, of twice a week every other month. So that's not bad. And then, yeah, you know, just flat out doing my own engines and trying to promote a motocross shop I've got by running a motocross team. And that has really zapped a lot of energy, that. But it's good, you know, I've got a strong 16-year-old that's leading the British Championship, which is good in our first year. We've got our final round in Northern Ireland coming up at the end of the month. He's got a 7-point lead, so hopefully if we can win that, it's a good championship for Kawasaki that we've won. So it's good.
What's the lad's name?
He's called Robert Davidson.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's really good. Obviously, motocross. I'm trying to talk him into getting him into road racing. To be fair, because he's, you know, he's got a bright future. He's just fast on two wheels.
Aren't we always? Even when we're talking about dirt, we are always trying to pull somebody over to the dark side. That being road racing.
Yeah, well, they generally end up there eventually. I mean, some of the best road racers has come from motocross. You never know, I might be able to find a talented youth motocross rider and eventually nurture him to road race. It's the plan, so we'll see what happens.
Cool. I actually found it a bit ironic that you are working with Wilson Craig this year, and if I remember back to 2011 was when you were building engines for Wilson Craig through PTR, and you guys kind of withdrew from the paddock because of contractual stuff. And now you're working with them on a contractual basis yourself and having such great success.
Yeah, I know. I've had a big relationship with Wilson Craig since 2006 when, as a customer of Honda UK, bought the ex-Eugene Laverty Red Bull bikes off Honda. So I was always kind of assisting Wilson, and it was me that brought him to the PTR package, really. And obviously, the contractual reasons between him and Simon broke down, I had to leave the island. But the year after, obviously, when I decided to sort of go on my own, I looked after all Wilson's material last year, and again, obviously, this year. And yeah, you know, it's been good. Cameron's a great rider. Wilson's a great bloke. The core of the team's there, and you know, the TT's been strong for Cameron the last few years. It's been really good.
If you look at because you've been around the paddock for an awful long time, which is surprising because you still look like a young lad. You must be doing some. You must have a good hairdresser.
That's my wife.
Yeah. You look back at the guys that you've brought up through the years, and I guess we would have to look at Eugene right now. I mean, going into this weekend at Portimao, he's got to be a favorite, which, you know, you said you were having conversations about Craig Jones the other night, where they have that permanent statue.
Yeah.
And you have to be going into this weekend kind of looking in that direction anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think that Eugene's definitely a title contender this year in World Superbikes. He's just had a lot of mixed fortune at the minute, but I think once he find everything in place for him, I think Eugene's going to be a bit of a runaway. I mean, I always said back in 2004 when I was working with Eugene, he's one of the most talented people I've ever worked with, to be fair. And given the opportunity, he will be a world champion. So, you know, hopefully Eugene can pull that off this year. And again, the Portimao circuit for Eugene, it was a circuit that he spent a lot of time in that. Obviously being with a team and the background we had with the circuit. So I think it's going to be a strong weekend for Eugene. It'll be good to watch Sunday night when I get back. So, yeah, be good.
We need to get rid of that pesky Frenchman-British dude.
Yeah, I mean, again, Sylvain, he's a good rider, and I wouldn't have expected him to be as sharp as what he's been, you know. And you know, he's just, you've seen it before with the likes of Max and Checker as they're getting on, they just seem to get stronger. So maybe Guntol is just getting stronger and stronger, but I'd like to think that Eugene can definitely have the better of him. I would say he's definitely a more talented rider. He's just you know, if you look at Eugene's results this year, he's had quite a few DNFs and misfortune. So once they get that right, I think Eugene will be a runaway.
Okay. I can tell in your voice that you are exhausted. Now, we've just finished the senior day and with lightweights as well. I can hear you basically wanting to take a nap before you potentially go out tonight. But if I were you, I would just take a really long nap, dude.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go out, to be honest. I think I may go out somewhere quick to eat with Cameron and the team and that, and just catch up with him tomorrow, really. I mean, it's already quite late now, and a lot of people are heading out, and it's just going to get messy. And I've got a lot to do when I get home Sunday, and I don't want to spend tomorrow on a boat with a hangover, so I'm definitely not drinking.
When somebody says to you, "Hey, Mark, we've got a great idea," just walk the other way.
Yeah, no, definitely. I will not be drinking.
All right, mate. Listen, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
No problem.
I appreciate it. And let's try and have another chat as the year goes on. There's more stuff that I want to talk to you about. The PBM stuff in BSB to me is also quite fascinating.
All right. No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. Be good tonight, sir.
Cheers. Thank you, Jim. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
We haven't got the list of donators, so this is going to be, in fact, we're going to have a show purely to talk about the donators and the subscription recurrentness, as Jim's put in the recurrences, I think that was meant to be, in the show notes. So I do apologize, but please, we are coming up to the stage where we are all going to be going to the races, me to Silverstone, Jim and Jules to Indy and to Laguna. And hopefully we'll get...
And Germany for me.
And, of course, yes, Sachsenring. And it's an expensive business. And we do it for love, but we also have to feed our families and eat. And you think wife B's demanding when it comes to food. Wife C, D, and E, they are just, you know... They like their haute cuisine. So it is an expensive business. So any donation, however small, and literally, guys, I mean that, you know, a dollar or two, it makes a difference, you know, because I know where to steal free coffee from at Silverstone. So I don't spend it on coffee. We'll spend it on worthwhile stuff like bandwidth.
Right.
I don't know what bandwidth is. I thought it was the size of a tire, but apparently not. Anyway, I'm waffling just for a change. Everybody, do please keep the emails coming. Speak to us on Twitter. I'm at MotopodMartin. Jules is at PopMonkey, but instead of the E between the K and the Y, you put a number 3, which we keep trying to get him to change because it's confusing. And Jim is at Cafe Race. Or go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/MotoPod. We'll get you to us. Or visit the website, www.motopodcast.com. And there's a donate button down the left-hand side. Or you can even subscribe. You know, guys, if you want to give us $12 a year, that's brilliant. If you want to give us a dollar a month on a subscription, it means we can predict that income and we can actually sort of budget properly like a proper businessy thing.
Dear Lord.
Yeah.
So he's got to keep the books now? Ugh.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm good at cooking. Shouldn't really
and
mention
flying
that.
Apparently.
Yeah, well,
but not bandwidth.
No, I'm rubbish at bandwidth. Okay, Duke Jules, thank you for joining me on this lovely evening.
Yeah, I hope you get. I mean, you're basically off duty now, right?
Yeah, we're on duty from 9 till 9. But obviously, mm-hmm. if we get a shout at 8:30 and it's 45 miles away, then we sure. end up going late. But because of
do you get to go home today, or are you staying at the base?
I'm making my own arrangements. Is the official line? No, I crash it. We've got a lovely, comfortable sofa bed. If I were to drive home now, or yeah, when we finish at 9, by the time you put the cab away and everything, I wouldn't really get away till 9:30. I'd get home at 10:30, walk in, say hello, love, go to bed, get up, and drive back to work.
Right,
and it's 45 yeah. miles each way, so it's just like. You know, I mean, we're just saving a shed load of it's not perfect, but we'll stick with it for the time being and see how things go.
Cool, man. All right. Well, enjoy the evening alone and on the couch, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. And I'll hopefully speak to you guys next week, and the week after will be, of course, the post Catalunya Lorenzo celebration edition.
All right.
Yeah, I will have to put that in because people are disappointed if I don't get all fanboyish.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Brilliant.
Okay, man.
Cheers, yep. Everyone. G'day.
Race here for Motopod with Richie, Metalhead, infamous We're Aboard member, new racer, and that's kind of what I want to talk about a little bit, because it's cool to talk to somebody that's just kind of taken up the sport. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
Good. You need to fix your phone, dude.
Is it that bad?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I'm sorry, man.
No wonder your wife wants to stab you in the forehead with a fork.
I know. It's like this. Everything we have makes noise and does this crap.
Anyway, the reason that I'm talking to Richie, aka Metalhead, is because he's probably been one of the most. Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here, man. Sorry, we changed okay. phones again. We're trying right. anything.
Funny. And this is probably one of the most amusing aspects, because you showed up on the We're Aboard about a year ago,
right?
And basically said, I want to race. But at the same time, as you were getting towards doing that, I have to say, dude, that you were
You have a career in comedy if you want to stop this welding shit.
It's, well, I mean, you know, it's real life. So, you know, I'm not a comedian whatsoever. I mean, this is actually how I live, and this is my life.
I'm not sure how much of it is real, my friend.
83%. How about that?
Do you ever sit down and write some of this stuff out and go, oh, that was good?
No, actually, no. To be quite honest with you, I just, you know, something will happen in the house or outside the house or down the road, and I'll think about it, and I'll go, well, that's messed up, and then I will sit down and just start typing. And, of course, I may add, you know, a little something here or there, maybe, but it's just real life, man. This is how I live. This is me.
Stream of consciousness, as they call that, stream of consciousness.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Consciousness, yeah. I don't know about, but...
All right, so we do have to ask about Shaniqua, since we've got you on
okay.
the line.
Do it.
Is she as hot as you say?
She is, and she is a recently turned 50-year-old who is, I don't know, 5'4 and about 115 pounds. She keeps herself tight. She works out, and everything jiggles and wiggles in just the right place.
This is gonna be awesome. You know, the funny thing is you're gonna end up being amongst some Isle of Man TT crew chiefs and some MotoGP racers, and there's gonna be this dude from, and where are you from?
Greenville, South Carolina.
This dude from Greenville, South Carolina, mixed in with those folks. That's good.
Well, you know, you got to throw a little insanity in from time to time. Not like those guys aren't insane, because they are, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Have you been watching Isle of Man TT?
A tad here and there. I have to get up early every day, so, you know, it comes on late at night. So I've just been doing what I can. Just bits and pieces.
Have you ever listened to my show before?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Sure did. Right. Checked it out several times, man. All the links that you provide and stuff. It's cool stuff, man. Really good stuff.
Cool. Yeah, that would be kind of ironic if I'm sitting here talking to you on the phone. You'd be like, I've never heard your stuff, but. All right. So what else can we talk about?
I don't know. Beer?
Well, we could talk about beer, but then you don't really drink beer. But then again, I don't either.
I do.
Nobody self-respecting would consider PBR or Foster's real beer.
PBR is the shit, man. I just had some, okay?
All right, well, good for you. And I did crack a Foster's before I got on the call with you. I want to talk to you about your first race weekend, because you just got that done.
Right.
So you made a decision to race. You're racing a FCR 400.
That's right.
What year?
That's right.
What year?
90.
Okay. And you survived. You didn't crash. You didn't knock your brains out. You got your name back on the BBS.
Thanks a lot, Dave Kay.
Yes. What did you think of the whole experience? It's kind of cool. I will tell you for a fact, because I've done some racing in the past, that I know that first check or the first green flag that was waved, you were probably basically wetting yourself.
I was. I mean, across the board, 100%. It was the most terrifying experience I've ever had in my life. But as soon as I got going, I started laughing inside my helmet, and then I calmed down and just rolled along with everybody. I just hung around in the back and, you know, did a couple little things here and there and just enjoyed myself. It was hands down the best experience I've ever had, you know, other than having a kid and being married to the old lady.
good comeback there. She might hear this.
Right.
If I could give you one piece of advice for your future racing career, and you're my age basically,
right.
Congratulations on starting later, but it's one word: breathe.
And I've seen you post that so many times, and I have listened to that, and I have followed that, and I've said that inside my helmet when I was racing at Barber. I chilled out. I said, breathe, be smooth, be calm, and have fun, you know.
Yeah.
And I took off, and I appreciate the input from you and all the other people on the Weir board. The whole place is just awesome. They just help everybody out that really wants to get out and start racing. It's good stuff.
Absolutely. And you couldn't have picked a better racetrack to start at. Barber's beautiful facilities, everything.
Yeah, I would agree. I had several really, really good showers there, so.
Good. Hopefully you've had some since.
All the chicks will know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm leaving that one alone. You got to remember, I don't edit shit out, dude.
I don't give a damn. Let it fly.
All right. Well, listen, I just wanted to have a quick chat with you because when I did that little gig bit before, I didn't get it recorded.
Right.
And let me just double check here real quick because I didn't check. Yes, this one is actually being recorded.
Oh,
so
you finally actually got it right this time. Way to go.
What I may actually do, and I'm trying to figure out for the show, but I may just put this on the board today and let everybody hear Metalhead.
Well, okay.
It's a bit of a preview.
That's fine. It's just a start, by the way. I have plenty of stuff to go on, so.
What I can do is I'll post it and I'll under a topic, questions for Metalhead.
That would be awesome. Let's do it. We can have fun with this.
All right, brother. You be good.
You do the same.
Aniqua, I said hello, and your little daughter that's actually a man.
Yeah.
Good for
yeah, the evil child.
All right. Hide the forks, and we will talk to you soon, dude.
All right, man. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.